Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the HR Happy Hour. This is Steve Bowes, your host for the evening. With me, of course. And you'd expect no differently, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. How are you tonight, Shauna?
I'm doing good.
What, Shauna, on a scale of, say, 1 to 10, how are you?
I would have to go with an 8 or a 9.
Nice.
Beautiful. 8 or 9, that's great. Well, great, Shauna. I'm probably about a 6.5 right now, but hopefully
Aww.
By the end of the show, well, it's all right. We'll
have to bring that up.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will. It's going to be a great show tonight. I'll have a lot of fun. It's a great topic.
Yeah, totally.
And some great guests. So this is the HR Happy Hour, episode 37, The Culture Show. It is March 18th, 2010. The call-in number, area code 646-378-1086. If you're hanging out, listening, or tweeting about the show tonight, our hashtag is, of course, HR Happy Hour. We will try to keep an eye on the tweets and comments going on out there. And so, let's get right to it. Let's get right to the Culture Show. We've got a couple of great guests. We're really excited to have them with us to talk all things company and organizational culture. Let's welcome our first guest, who is, I think, her first time on the HR Happy Hour, I want to say. Let's welcome Megan M. Bureau. Megan, welcome to the HR Happy
Yay.
Hour.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm founder of a company called Talent Culture, and we're a talent acquisition and branding company, and we also happen to have a blog community. And we're an eclectic group of people I've assembled after being in the industry for many, many years. So it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, Megan, thanks for joining us. We've tried, Megan and I know we have tried over a period of a few months to connect and have Megan come on the show, so I'm really pleased that it finally worked out tonight. So thanks and welcome. And
I would like to say one thing. The fact that you guys did a self-assessment and giving your rating on how you feel from a scale of maybe 1 to 10, that makes me really happy.
I might have not been completely truthful about mine, but we'll come back to that perhaps.
Well, we're kind of hoping that we do a self-assessment every 10 minutes of the show, actually.
Oh.
And it's a self-rating, essentially. Because once upon a time, before I started Talent Culture, I was in school to be a psychologist a long, long time ago. So I'm a big believer in the concept of personality in terms of how that relates to hiring. And self-rating is just kind of an old psychology term. So let's have some fun with it.
Oh, great. Megan, thanks so much. Let's try to do that. Let's welcome our next guest, who is a veteran of the show, been on 2 or 3 times at least, that I can recall. But we're so happy to have her back. She's fantastic. And welcome, Cherie Klimek. Cherie, how are you tonight?
Thank you. I would say I'm about an 8 tonight.
Hey.
I've had a couple of lattes. It's been a good day. We got out. I'm sitting with a glass of wine, and we're ready to talk culture. So what, it doesn't get any better than that.
That's true.
Sheree, yeah, tell us a little bit about what you do and where we can find you in your company on the web.
Absolutely. My company is called Bokai. It literally means voice, and we work to help companies empower the voices that shape their brands. So that being both of their employees as well as their customers. And so to do that, we really, and I know this is sounding cliche these days, but really do try to kind of bridge the gap between marketing, HR, internal communications, to really dive deep into the culture, align a company's brand with its values, get employees to behave and, you know, engaged in the business strategy to deliver on performance. And so, obviously, I am a culture geek. I am a brand geek. So that's why I was very excited to be asked to be on tonight's show, which I think is number 4 for me, Steve.
Wow.
Oh, number 4.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Like I was saying before, remember the very first impromptu Friday at, you know, 4:45?
Yeah.
Hey, let's jump on the phone and do a HR happy hour. So
totally.
Yeah, we should
be back. Thank you.
We should replay some clips from that first night. One
we
of these
should.
Weeks. I will
Funny.
Try to get that organized. Last couple of announcements. Again, the call-in number is 646-378-1086. If you want to call in and just hang out and listen, that's great. If you call in and want to ask a question or make a comment on the show tonight, just go ahead and press 1 once you connect, and we definitely plan on trying to take a few calls tonight. I have one other quick announcement. We are going to have, Sean, our first ever live remote special report is coming in tonight a little bit later on in the show. Yeah, from Mary Ellen Slater, who's the senior editor at SmartBrief, SmartBrief on workforce, SmartBrief on your career. She's going to be calling in with a live report from the fancy Sherm VIP tweet-up kind of thing.
Going ooh, it's the VIP tweet-up.
Right, down in Washington, D.C.
Nice.
So we'll look to hear from her a little bit later on in the show. All right, so let's get into it. Let's talk about culture. And I'm going to start, Sheree and Megan, and you guys can fight over who wants to take this question with just a real basic question. I want to know, what do we mean when we talk about an organization's culture? You know, we can't really see that. We can't measure it necessarily. We can't value it, like, on a balance sheet. So what is a company's culture? What are we talking about?
No, this is Megan with Talent Culture. Can I go first?
Go for it.
Got it.
You know, I mean, I think company culture, corporate culture really boils down to its people. It's a set of values, a set of, you know, belief systems that have been indoctrinated either, you know, if you're a startup company, you know, that's a beautiful thing because you can actually develop those in terms of bringing past experiences in your career into that. Or if you're, you know, an established corporation, it's something that you've sort of grown up with. So I think corporate culture equals people, and the organization that is made up of all these different personalities in the mix. Typically, you know, a culture is formed by the senior management team, but it's nurtured by all the hires that come after that.
So the senior leadership team, even going back to a company's actual initial founding, really sets the stage for what the culture will become? Is that sort of what you're saying, Megan?
I think so. I mean, I think if you're dealing a lot, you know, my company is Talent Culture, and we deal sort of in the small to medium-sized corporate market. So a lot of my clients are startup companies, right? They're companies with anywhere from 5 to, say, 50 employees, and they have the luxury of starting from scratch. And I do see a lot of senior management team taking that task on, but I think as more hires occur, you know, it's sort of a natural progression that happens where people, you know, you start taking on new personalities that are hired. But ultimately, and I don't think there's any right or wrong answer here. I do see in terms of trends in the marketplace that, you know, senior management tends to kind of drive that. And sometimes it takes people coming in from the outside, like consultants, so to speak, saying, you know, what is your corporate culture here? And a lot of times in the small to medium-sized corporate markets, they're so fixated on either their product or their service that they don't really have the luxury of time to spend on something that maybe they think is a little more nebulous. what is actually the vibe in the company culture? What is the flow? What do people believe in? What kind of music do they listen to? What are their hobbies? So it's, corporate culture is a big topic, and it's something that I think we need to continue to dissect and talk about. But it's definitely, it's about people.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sheree, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my definition of culture is very much in alignment with Megan's, but, I mean, you guys all know I'm a brand and a culture geek, so I'm a firm believer that branding begins from the inside out, so whenever I define an organizational culture, it naturally means I'm going to provide a definition around an organizational brand. To me, the two are inextricably linked, and I also believe in with today's talent market and more from a consumer standpoint, your culture is your brand and your brand is your culture.
Right.
You know, and here's why. I mean, your organizational culture, or your organizational brand, if I can define that, to me it's the sum of all of the perceptions and experiences, interactions, associations, rumors, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beliefs that people have about your company, both inside and out. Your brand is everything. You know, it's definitely your people, as Megan alluded to, but it's also, you know, it believe it or not, it still has to do with tangible surroundings like buildings and machines, and the, you know, whether or not people have the right equipment to work with, the latest and greatest technology. Some people don't really think about that as being part of the brand, but believe it or not, it also affects the culture and the atmosphere, the experiences. In that sense, and so to me, culture, it's to Megan's point, you know, it's a belief system, but, you know, I also think it's a collective of expressed values, attitudes, and definitely, you know, actions and behaviors that individuals at any level in the organization show on a daily basis, and that's really what, you know, the behaviors, the attitudes, the beliefs, they're the molecules, they're the proteins, they're the, can't remember, like, nucleotides.
Right, that's a very complicated word.
But, you know, that shapes the cultural DNA. That's the essence of who you are as a brand, and it's certainly all about the people.
Okay, so basically then we're saying, you know, the organizational culture, it's sort of set, or sort of the tone is set from senior leadership or organization founders. It's sort of expressed through people and how they act, what they do, to some extent how they're treated, how they interact with each other. So, but it's also perhaps influenced by external factors as
right.
well, right? So,
right.
So Sheree made an interesting sort of observation there. She mentioned the organization's sort of external brand, I think, at least early she hinted at that. And I just want to touch on that a little bit as to how much of an organization's external or sort of public-facing persona or branding, how much does that influence the internal culture that we're talking about today? Like if you're Apple Corporation and you're selling these crazy, you know, interesting and innovative technical products, does that mean necessarily that the internal culture is going to be filled up with, you know, creative, interesting, and innovative people in a culture that would back that up? Is that a natural line we can draw?
Well, I think that, you know, you can certainly draw the line, you know, talking about Apple in particular. You know, just because, I mean, I'm assuming Apple has an entire team of creative and innovative and people that experiment and take risks and, you know, do what it takes to get those products out there. They're one of the most famous brands of our time. Does that mean that, you know, do they have a strong culture? Does that mean that they have a trusting culture?
Right, right.
You know, they're very restrictive. They're very private. They don't like to the outside world to really know what's going on
right.
side. So it's really hard to make that distinction. I think that they're probably the exception to the norm. I mean, you take example, and everyone uses this example, I know, and it's not Zappos. It's
She's
going to
use Google. Is somebody going to say Google?
I think, and Southwest just came out with a really great article about their internal employee blog that they're just launching. But what I found most interesting in that is that 80% of their staff say that they work at Southwest because of the culture. And Southwest has maintained their profitability throughout, you know, the recession, throughout 9/11. Their financials are strong. And so, you know, you can certainly draw a line between the consumer brand as well as the company brand or the organizational brand and the culture that it fosters.
I think what we're really talking about is a matter of, and we'll get into this topic at some point, I'm sure, is this idea of authenticity, though. Because as a person who's at the sort of forefront of bringing talent into organizations, one of the big missing pieces I see is, you know, job seekers really not able to get enough info about what is the corporate culture really like. You know, and I'm out there saying, well, personality culture fit is really the key piece that keeps people retained in companies. That's sort of the happy factor, right, that keeps people sort of that glue that keeps people together. And so I think with the emergence of, you know, social media and blogging and some of these other, you know, microblogging and a lot of these sites, luckily for job seekers, I think we're seeing more and more information in terms of people's personal blogs talking about, you know, what they're doing in the office setting, et cetera. But there's definitely, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect, I think, if we look in the reality of what the perception of a brand is and what people are experiencing of the brand inside the company.
I agree, Meg. And I think that, you know, Best Buy is a great example of a company that is doing that really, really well.
Yep.
Because they are allowing their employees to get out there and be part of the conversation, and they don't have, you know, the restrictions. So anyone that's looking to work at Best Buy, whether it's at the retail level or at the corporate level, they're really able to see, you know, what it's truly like. And I think that they even offer the opportunity to talk directly with individuals to get the scoop, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, I want to pause the conversation for just 1 second and just quickly give out the call-in number again. It's 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on and ask a question or make a comment. On Twitter, our hashtag is HR Happy Hour. We're following along as well. We do have Megan Biro and Cherie Klimek with us talking about company culture, organizational culture, and using big words and confusing me, and it's great. So let's. I do want to follow up, though, on one question. We sort of jumped a little bit into something I wanted to talk about, which was the idea on the talent acquisition side, Megan. You talked about candidates trying to learn about an organization's culture, and really mm-hmm. the converse of that perhaps is even more important, right? The organization trying to assess whether or
right.
not a particular candidate might be a quote-unquote so-called cultural fit, right, for their organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple questions on that. One, you sort of hinted at a little bit, and you described how candidates might go about trying to learn more about an organization's culture before an interview or before accepting or considering a job offer. And then
mm-hmm.
the follow-up to question to that would be, how do organizations in the hiring process go about making that kind of cultural fit assessment of a given candidate in an interview situation?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I think the most important factor we need to look at is the length of time that is spent in the actual interviewing process. I'm a big believer that the longer we can spend in the interviewing process and the more I can look at candidates who are job seekers and say, you know, let's bring you in for 3 rounds of interviews. The longer you spend in this interview process, the better. I think from a candidate's or a job seeker's perspective, there's a lot that they can do to empower themselves on a job search. I would like to make one note as somebody, you know, I do have a private career coaching and personal branding practice. A lot of the times when people are in job seeking mode, they're in a state of perhaps panic or they're feeling out of sorts. It's a stressful time, I think, for a lot of people. And I really, you know, coach people to say, take your time, you know, really empower yourself, you know, go scan blogs in the industry, find out, you know, look, you know, come up with your 20 target companies and start finding company blogs and really researching, you know, both the company, you know, certainly the company's mission statement is a first step. But let's face it, I think that company mission statements are, you know, you're not going to really get to the core of what the culture is in a mission statement. What you need to be doing is informational interviews with people maybe who have worked there previously, going on LinkedIn and finding, you know, looking for recommendations, looking for sort of word of mouth, looking for, you know, news coverage and press releases. There's a lot that can be learned from how a company actually presents itself to the world, both to its investors, to its customers, and to its employees. Maybe understand not just where, you know, the company is going, but maybe where they've been. So look at, you know, again, I guess it comes up to, you know, news coverage and sort of things that have that are written about companies and blogs. You got to set up informational. You have to network. You know, there's luckily with social media, there's more information out there now than there was, say, you know, even 5-10 years ago for job seekers to find out about a company and right. what people have been experiencing within that.
And Megan, right. I would even add to that, I mean, from a recruiter standpoint, and I know that there's a lot of recruiters listening in, so if anyone wants to jump in on this, please do so. But I would say hiring from a behavioral hiring is also very important, especially because mm-hmm. culture has so much to do with employee behaviors and attitudes. And from a candidate standpoint, understanding what are the, you know, aside from the benefits, you know, the usual things that are posted on the careers website, how will I be recognized and rewarded for performing to to meet the company's business objectives and, you know, obviously within my job description, but to help with the greater goal of helping the company succeed, and that typically needs to be aligned with the company's values, mm-hmm. and you know that performance and those behaviors need to be aligned in, and the company really needs to, and candidates and employees really need to understand how and what that looks like. You know, how mm-hmm. do I perform? How do I behave? How do I, you know, help this company succeed?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I can give you some examples as a recruiter figure of questions I might ask candidates during an interview about culture fit. That might be helpful.
Give me just one, and then I want to go ahead and take a couple of phone calls.
Yep.
Give me one question you might ask, Megan.
I might say, you know, tell me about the corporate culture in your last job, or what was your last employer like in terms of corporate culture? What kind of environment do you work best in? Things like that. You know, really kind of getting to the core of, you know, how much of an understanding does the job seeker have of what they're looking for?
Okay, let's pause right there for a second, Megan. I wanted to go ahead and take a call. We have a call on line 10 we want to bring on. This is because I always take these calls from the best HR city, the best HR city in the world.
Because they have to.
Area code 513, you are on the HR happy hour.
Hey, how y'all doing? 513, I can't believe you actually took us as the first call. How you doing, Steve? Shauna?
Hi, Ben.
This is Ben. Hey, this... I will take three calls right away. I have to. You're the best.
Hey, if I can make a good first and last impression, that's fine.
Oh, you are the savior of the 513.
Oh, no, don't do that. question for you all is, I mean, cultures kind of evolve and change. They progress, they alter, I mean, depending on leadership, the people that are brought in, kind of like what you alluded to earlier, from management to leadership. So in your perception, how do you see new technology and even social media either enhancing or being a detriment to the cultures that exist or may come out of the companies and changing and evolving? And part two to that is, based off that, like, overall company cultures not only have their overall company culture, but they have kind of the other cultures within departments, whether it be accounting has its own way that they deal with things, HR, operations, to even a field force that are outside of the corporate
right.
Entity. So with all that, how do you see, like, not only things evolving and changing with the new economy, but also social media either adding, enhancing, or kind of pulling away from that?
Megan, do you mind if I take that one?
Not at all. Go for it.
Go ahead, Cherie.
I'm really glad that you brought up the sort of the subcultures because it's definitely something that impacts the overall organization. It's natural. I mean, when you think about it from an anthropological standpoint, every culture has subcultures. And in an organization, they could be divided by functional areas. But even within those functional areas, you've got little groups of people that sort of form together, and they are, you know, either pro-company or against company or somewhere in between. And, you know, leadership is constantly striving to get them to be engaged and to get them to perform at peak levels. So I think that, you know, you bring up a great point in trends and technologies that are going to be really critical for companies moving forward that will allow them to enable, and I'm sorry, I'm going to use a buzzword and a term again, but it's true. It's breaking down silos. I mean, there are social tools that allow organizations inside to be able to connect better with one another, to share feedback, you know, to gain ideas from employees that, you know, they were never really able to tap into before. It kind of gives everyone a voice and an opportunity for leadership to listen and to use that feedback to perhaps improve processes or within a certain department or function, or to, you know, improve their reward or recognition system and drive, you know, company profits in the end. I'm stuttering a little bit. Did I answer that okay? I'm on my last line.
You did great. When the best HR city challenges the guests, it's tough. They come in. They come in strong. You know this. It's fine.
Yep.
You did great. Ben, hang out with us for a few minutes if you can.
Sure.
We're talking culture. We have Megan Biro with us, Cherie Klimek with us. Ben McCall is joining the fun. If you want to get in on the action, 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to ask a question or make a comment. There's quite a few folks on the line, so go ahead and press 1 if you want to get in on the action. A lot of interesting tweets going on. Sean, I don't know if you've noticed any questions or comments that are worth bringing up to the panel.
A lot of talk about subcultures.
The subculture is a very interesting notion, actually, and I do want to jump in on one big – I'm going to throw in another buzzword, authenticity. I think the more that we can become a more authentic culture, both from within the organization and without, you know, outside of the organization stepping into an organization as a job seeker, the better off we're all going to be, because the tools of social media are making that a reality. And I think we're all seeing that every day, and people, you know, authenticity is in, right? But I think it's also healthy. You know, I think it's a healthy place to be from a workplace standpoint.
This is maybe sort of a different topic for a different show, but I just wonder with authenticity, and I don't disagree with you, but I just wonder if you can sort of consciously decide, you know what, we need to be more authentic. Like, to me,
you either are or you aren't.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that something you are, you're not, or am I missing the boat on that?
Yeah, I think companies, from like more of a company standpoint or a workplace standpoint, really need to understand how to be that in a way that's authentic to their brand and their mission. Because I think so often they feel like, well, it's difficult to be authentic because we need to make our numbers and we're driving a new sales force. And how do we actually let people know that, you know, there's going to be some weeks where they're working 60 hours a week and it's not all, you know, fun and games. It's hard work. And how do you actually present that as an employer brand? in a way that's compelling and authentic. And the way to do that is just to sort of have meetings to empower the senior management team and people on the sub teams and all the in the different departments, like Ben had mentioned, to really come together and talk about what that reality is. Because so often what I see at the outside in the talent acquisition process is people overselling what the company is and what the role is. And when you oversell, and then you have candidates and job seekers that accept an offer and they get into a corporate culture and it's not at all what they were told it was in the interviewing process,
right.
That's a really, really, you know, unfortunate situation that I think happens way too often.
Right.
Because
so you have to be authentic when you're presenting authenticity?
Yeah.
Say that again?
Yeah, I missed that.
You have to be authentic to be when you're presenting authenticity,
yeah.
I guess. Then.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Hold on, Ben. We've got a couple more folks who want to jump in on the call, and I want to bring them up because we do have our special report coming up shortly. Shauna, these shows are going so fast. We're halfway through the show already. It's ridiculous.
I know. It's so amazing.
Crazy. Let's bring on we have a call coming in either on Skype or through a private number. So we'll take a shot. This is 111. Hi, you're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hello.
Oh, that's me. It's Etienne from Switzerland.
Yay. Is this Etienne?
Oh, hi.
Yeah, Etienne, how's you? Hey, Shauna, how are you doing?
Good.
Etienne, we are great. How are you?
We seem to have a little delay.
Yeah, a slight one.
Just a slight one. So you have a question or a comment?
No, I thought it was just cool to be here.
Okay.
And to listen to you guys. And I pressed one. You said I should press one. So I did it.
Okay.
And I said, I thought I would never get through.
Wow.
Oh.
But,
no, the show is very popular, but you did manage to squeeze in.
But
welcome.
I must confess, I don't have a question or comment to say.
All right. You know what?
It's just nice to be there.
In this situation, you just tell Shauna that she's great and you love the show.
Yes.
You're all set. That's all you have to
say. Shauna's great anyway.
All right, ATN, thanks so much. I'm going to jump to another call. So hang out with us.
Sure.
Though, and keep listening. All right.
It was cool. Talk to you.
Be cool.
Country code 44, you are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, it's Bill.
Hi.
Hi, Shauna. Hi, everyone. And hi, Etienne. It's a bit of a true London reunion going on here.
Just a bit, but you know, without the rain and
the United Parades. I've just got a few things, a comment and a question, really. Megan, it's great to talk to you.
Yeah,
you off the tweet
when
you were so long.
Yeah.
The big thing I've got is I hear a lot of talk about culture and what culture should be in what I kind of call the HR tree hugging fraternity. But the big thing, the most important thing for me, and maybe it's because I'm a recruiter, is
right.
Understanding what your culture is and recruit to that, because it's much more about getting the right people into that culture. And I don't think there's an absolute definitive that people want, because I've worked with people in quite regimented organisations who've actually needed that regimentation and can't survive outside it. So I think it really is about identifying what your culture is and being realistic in how you put across that expectation.
Yeah.
And equally, I think for job seekers, they've got to decide what culture they really want and be quite true to that. What would be the view of your panel on that statement, or am I talking nonsense?
No, Bill, I completely Megan with talent culture here, and I completely appreciate what you're talking about. You know, I agree with your statement that, you know, it's there's two responsibilities. There's actually three responsibilities if you're talking about a recruiter, Bill, like you and I have been in the recruiting industry for a while. So there's the recruiter, There's the job seeker, and then we have the corporation who's hiring. And I think everybody needs to come into it with a realistic set of expectations of what they're looking for and what they really want. And so many times, Bill, I'm sure you've seen this over the years, sometimes job seekers get into a job search mode, and they don't really know what they want. So the more authentic
I'd argue a lot of them just want a job. Like,
right.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
right now,
right now, there is a lot of people who want a job.
Can I raise my hand?
Yeah. Would you like to be hired this evening?
Yes, I would, actually.
All right. We'll make it happen.
Sweet.
Hey, but, how are you rating right now, Shauna, on a scale of 1 to 10, by the way?
Well, mm-hmm. I think that dropped me down to a 7.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
Go ahead, Megan.
You know, I mean, I agree with Bill. I mean, it's, you know, I do the style that I have for talent culture, my company, and sort of my vision. I'm a big believer in personality culture fit. So I'm going to weigh in on skills and resume, but that's probably only half of the equation. The other half is the personality and culture fit, and I'll probably even go heavier on the personality culture fit. But again, a lot of it depends on what my client needs and sort of how they want to build out their organization. And as Bill alluded to earlier, sometimes organizations want something completely different than they have in their organization. Hey, we want somebody. We want a director of sales who's, you know, been at Apple, because everybody here has been at Fidelity. You know, and that person does bring in a fresh face and a new type of injection of personality. So it's a very complex.
I think it comes
topic back
to that person, though. It's a real key thing that I'm going to shut up in a minute, Steve. Don't worry. I think it's a really important thing that for me, and I've had this argument on Twitter today. The first thing you should define and the first thing you should interview is the person, because you get the right person. And then you look at whether they've got the right skill set. I think experience gets people through the door on the resume. The first interviewing part should be all about the person. And if that person isn't right for that culture, doesn't matter how good they are on paper, they're not going to work out. And that's the mistake. And that's especially, you know, one of the cultural things between the US and the UK. In the US, there's a lot more talk about skills and experience being the lead thing, and I don't think that's the case. I think it's much harder to get the right person than it is to get the right skill set.
And
you know,
if I could just add,
you know,
I mean,
Bill, I think you might be right, but I'll tell you, I just saw something the other day. I think it was a BLS statistic. It might have been, but basically bemoaning the fact that, you know, in the next 5 years, United States corporations are going to have, you know, X millions of job openings that they can't fill because of lack of the necessarily required skills, many of them technical, right? So, you know, I don't, you know, so on the one hand, you can say, well, we've got to find the right cultural fit and we'll sort out the technical skills later. But on the other hand, it just seems like there's lots of big organizations that are bemoaning the fact that we can't find people with XYZ skill.
That's a whole different conversation.
That's a skill and training gap,
which is a major issue. But for me, I've got 10 questions that everybody gets asked at the first interview. I'll gladly send it out to anyone. It's 10 questions, which just means you understand what the person is and what they're about, and if that cultural bit matches, I don't even look at the resume until we've got the person fit right.
Yeah, but Bill, don't you? I mean, I certainly understand you've got to hire for all of that, and you've got to recruit for all of that. But if a company hasn't truly, or if their culture has changed, whether it's, you know, because a new CEO has come in and they want to take the company in a different direction, they've gone through a merger or an acquisition, they've had a lot of layoffs. You know, culture shift and changes have been happening left and right over the last 2 years. So I think that, you know, organizations and especially recruiters on the front end need to have a super strong understanding of what the culture is today. And to Megan's point, to go back to that authenticity, you've got to almost go back and redefine who you are, why should people work for you, and even take a look at, you know, what the probability is today that customers are going to buy from you, because customers are so involved now, even from a social media standpoint. So
if anyone wants some paperwork for defining questions that define culture in your interview, I'll hand them over.
Yeah,
now I'm going to be quiet because I've talked way too long and Steve's going to get angry.
Well, great, Bill, thanks so much.
He's already going to get angry.
If you have those questions online or posted on a blog somewhere, just, you know, tweet out the link and on the hashtag too, so we can find them easily.
I'll stick them on HR Minions blog because it's much better than mine. You can read it there.
Yeah, that's true. It is.
More people read that one.
Aww, you're so sweet.
Clearly.
Really, really, just in about 30 seconds, Steve, I want to address your question about personality culture fit versus hiring for a very specific technical skill set.
Yeah, please do.
I can tell you right now, my company, Talent Culture, is partnering with a 20-person software startup company, and we are hiring the software team for them. We are hiring .NET architects. We're hiring, you know, sort of very, very technical skill sets. And you know what? Steve, you bring up a good point. We are putting more emphasis on the technical skill set than we are the culture personality fit, but we are still able to sort of incorporate that doctrine into some behavioral-based questions.
Right.
Hey, what
right.
have you found
great.
Interesting about? So, I mean, we're trying to sort of walk that fine line, but I think you could be 60-40 or you could be 40-60. So there's
okay.
a couple of ways you can go. But the bottom line is, Bill Borman, I agree, you know, personality culture fit is what keeps people happy in companies.
Yeah.
It's not a technical skill set. So you just walk that fine line.
I do want to try to squeeze in one more question. I'm still before we get our report from Mary Ellen, we're looking for her to call in. And here's the question I wanted to bring up to Megan and to Cherie is, can an organization's culture, particularly one that's been around for a while, okay, we're not talking about a startup or a 15-person, you know, software shop that's just been around for a couple of years. Let's talk about a larger organization that's been around for many, many years, maybe a century. Can an organization's culture change? Does it evolve? And if so, if it needs to sort of meet market demands or to attract the kind of talent that they realize that they need, can an organization's culture actually change, you know, significantly?
Yes, but it's going to take a long, long time to do so. Organizations that have been around for a long time typically have a "we've always done it this way" attitude, and so change can be a very frightening thing, but it can certainly be done, and that typically comes in when, you know, you've got a new CEO, you've got a new president,
right.
you've got leadership that's driving that. The most important thing is that leadership is actually walking the talk when they're trying to change the culture, and they're because it's not an easy thing to do, especially for a Fortune 500. It's hard enough to do for a mid-sized company to completely try and, you know, turn the ship around. You know, one of the things that, you know, I keep kind of going back to behaviors and attitudes that are aligned with values inside the organization is one way a company can do that is helping employees understand where they fit in, you know, to the whole value proposition, how they impact business strategy. You know, what can they do on a daily basis? How can they behave and be rewarded for those behaviors that gradually over time, you know, through peer-to-peer recognition or whatever the case may be, help to evolve the culture? Communications is absolutely critical. At that point, it almost becomes an internal branding campaign as well, where you've got to sell that culture to your employees, and you've got to do so consistently. Leadership has got to lead by example. Managers need to be accountable. Employees need to be accountable. Processes need to change. There's a large amount of, you know, initiatives that go into that. So that's why changing a culture is not a drive-by initiative. It's definitely an inside job, and it's something that's going to take years to do.
And I would like to mention one thing. That there's probably a couple of things that drive internal culture change, and if we're looking at it from my experience over the years. Number one is you've got a change in the management team, and it's a complete overhaul. Or number two, we have a failure within the organization. There's a lack of motivation happening. There is some negative situation that has prompted the company to look for a workplace expert or some expertise to come in as a consulting practice or an individual consultant and help remedy situations. Typically what you see is something happen to sort of jolt them into place going, oh, there's something really wrong here. The sales team isn't performing. Or people are feeling really negative about, like, you know, this news that came in. It's usually like it's a human behavior thing. It's like something negative happens to impact them to actually make an action to move.
Right. Right. So, I think that's great points, Megan. You know, those, Sean, I say this all the time, those humans are so pesky in their behavior.
Right.
Damn
right.
them for getting in the way.
If our organizations could be run with more robots, we would be better off.
Steve, you bring up a really good point because, you know, you don't want employees to feel like they're having to conform to certain behaviors. You still want
Hold that thought. I'm coming back to that.
Oh, okay.
I have a question for you. I want to come back to that.
Okay.
I do want to take the call on line 13 because I believe this is Mary Ellen. I hope it is, with our special report from the Fancy Sherm event. So let's go to area code 202. Is this Mary Ellen?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Hi. Our first live report. Mary Ellen, what's happening down there?
I'm sitting outside the Library of Congress. Everybody else is inside drinking. And who knew you could drink in the Library of Congress? I'm pretty sure, like, there's something wrong with standing by the, you know, the Gutenberg Bible.
From what's going on in our Congress lately, I think you can drink right in Congress. I think that's probably happening too.
Well, the light on top of the hill is well lit, and whatever that light is on, that means they're in session. As you guys know, a number of the things that they're discussing in the session this week are very important for HR professionals. Let's start with healthcare. you guys are all kind of following what's going on, but I mean, you should know that that's been a big topic here: healthcare, immigration. There's a few other ADA compliance. People are worried about changes, you know, to the Family Medical and Leave Act. If you're an HR professional and you're trying to keep up with policy changes right now, I mean, it is a fantastically exciting and overwhelming time, I would say.
How's the event itself? Informative, lively, interesting?
It's great. It's sold out, or nearly sold out, for the conference itself, and there's 400 people here for this reception tonight, which is very cool. I found that this is where HR professionals go to lawyer up. the tone that I would get, you know, if this was the only HR conference I had ever attended, you know, you didn't go to national, you didn't go to, say, an ERE recruiting conference or anything like that, you only came to this, you would find a lot of people, Steve, would agree that robots would be better. So, because these pesky humans cause a lot of problems. I've been sitting in sessions about social media, and I swear nobody at any of these sessions seems to have any concept that they're good for anything other than spying on people. As far as building culture, building innovation, haven't heard a peep out of that. Nobody seems to be – the kind of conversation that you guys are having is very forward-looking. That is not what people are worried about here. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So two different sessions on social media. One guy told me, like, we aren't even supposed to have IM at work. Because we're just
not supposed to have IM at work? Really?
Yeah, because we're just going to use it to sexually harass each other.
What does he do in his spare time?
Did he say that in a bad context? Like that?
We can't.
Really?
I'm out of line. Right.
Okay.
From a technology standpoint, I mean, some of these systems are new, but then they're not new. And other people, you know, in the crowd have pointed out, well, if you've got policies about email and about other workplace communications, you know, those apply here just as well.
Right.
I've heard a lot of scare kind of tactics. Like, I heard somebody mention today in a session that the average worker wastes 2 hours a day on social networking sites.
I don't think I believe that.
2 hours of a work day, like 2 out of 8 hours. I mean, they claim to know this from monitoring traffic, but you can pull Facebook up and just leave it there.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting. There's a lot of that talk about that, but you know, the cool thing that's happening here is that people are taking this chance to come up to D.C. during this very exciting time. Sherm has done a lot of great work in getting people together and getting them access to their legislators, which, is that a premium right now? But, you know, if you came here as part of this conference and you wanted to meet your congressman, you wanted to meet your senator, you could probably do it.
You know, I got to say something. I don't want to meet my congressman.
Nice.
You know who my congressman is? It's that, yeah. the tickle guy. I don't want to meet him.
I don't want to know anymore, Steve.
You wouldn't be alone with him. Steve, you wouldn't be alone with him.
The whole thing's
right, you wouldn't be alone with him.
Shockingly. So, Mary Ellen, do you get the sense that folks there, or the crowd, though, you know, you got speakers coming up sort of giving the fear tactics and, you know, workers wasting time bit. Do you feel the crowd is buying into that message? Oh, yes.
Yeah? I feel like most of the people in the audience for some of those sessions are just looking for a reason to shut it down.
Wow.
The lawyers are giving it to them. I mean, Michael Vandervoort is here, and he's been the guy in every session to raise his hand that's like, but you can do cool things with this.
Right.
But it's like, you know, he's really the only one. And then I hear lots of talk about how can we spy. If there's nothing about engagement. I haven't heard a lot of questions about how do I engage my workers. It's like, well, how are we allowed to spy on them?
Mm.
You know, and people creating, one woman talking about creating like a dummy account so that they can friend union groups so that they can monitor what unions are doing on social media.
Oh.
See, again, it's about authenticity, right?
Yeah, that actually is so
deteriorating to the trust. The trust is just gone at that point.
Right.
But doesn't that the fact that the employee view the HR is the spy?
Right.
You know, that's kind of the sad thing. It just feeds into it. I went to a session earlier this morning where they were talking about legal. It's like it should be more of a question about engagement and involvement and actually getting to know ways to do it versus, you know, stopping people from doing it.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and that's been pretty much the same. It's very different from other events, you know, even going to ERE, you know, where it's more about how do we do this?
Right. That's a tough one to sell long term, without a doubt.
I mean, I realize that lawyers make their money on making themselves sound indispensable, but I mean, I would love to hear, for example, Sodexo is huge with social media, and they use it for recruiting. I want to know, how did Sodexo deal with their legal team? We'd be very curious.
Well, maybe they're on the phone.
We should round up some of the Sodexo people for a show.
We totally do.
I've met a couple of them. We should probably round them up one time and do a show like that. It'd be great.
You know, and to your point, I actually heard a phenomenal presentation by a lawyer at a conference that I attended a couple of weeks ago who was the first person who I ever saw that actually outlined the risks for an organization from a legal standpoint, whether it's a government, nonprofit, public, private, whatever it may be. And, you know, in order to truly build that business case, I think that you know, whether it's HR, marketing, or internal comms, or a combination of the three, if you go into your business case identifying the known risks right out of the gate, and then understanding or presenting how you are going to be able to overcome those risks, or alleviate, or now I'm at a loss for words here. But really, tackle it up front so that you're proving that this can be done, and it is something that's within the realm of possibility.
You know what this is about, everybody? You know what this is about? Storytelling.
Yes.
The more storytelling we can do through blogging, through social media outlets that tell the story of it's not going to be a complete disaster. If, you know, somebody in your company is on Facebook for a couple of hours, maybe they're learning something there that they can bring to the organization.
Come on.
You know, I mean, the thing is, the more that we can actually create a blogging platform that tells stories that are informative, that are realistic, that are true to people's experiences, again, I think we're coming down to an authenticity. There's a communication gap still happening, obviously. There's a trust issue that, you know, is going to take, I think, a long time to overcome, because I think the reality is a lot of companies still shun social media.
Yeah.
I think the
Megan,
more we can do that, the better.
Let me pause everybody here. Mary Ellen, thanks so much for the report. Have fun at the tweet up. Say hi to Mike Vandervoort and any of our other friends.
Yeah, give
him
a hug for me. Say hi to Mike.
Yep.
Thanks to Mary Ellen and the folks at SHRM for setting this up. And Mary Ellen, please feel free to hang out if you care to, or get back to the library.
Go back to the drinking.
Kind of funny things are going on.
Cheers.
We have about 6 minutes left in the show. Go ahead.
I'm waiting to see if that light turns off in the, you know, at the Capitol.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
They're going to do the puff of smoke thing like they do for the Pope, maybe. You know?
Oh.
Yeah. We have about 6 minutes left in the show. In case we get to the top of the hour and we're still sort of yammering away here, the live stream on the Internet does cut off at the top of the hour. Anybody who's on the line, on the phone lines now, will Shauna or I will open up all the phone lines right at the end of the show because I know we're going to spill over. Maybe we'll do a few minutes after show because there are a couple more folks hanging out on the line who want to get in and ask questions, and I know we're going to run over time. So again, if you're on the line hanging out and want to ask a question, go ahead and press 1. We'll open up all the lines at before the show cuts off on the live stream, and we'll take all the rest of the questions after that. So anything else we need to say, Shauna? Oh, Cherie, I had a follow-up question. You have to answer quickly.
No pressure. Okay. No pressure.
Yeah. No. A few weeks ago, we had a friend of the show, Grant McCracken, was on, the chief culture officer.
Yeah.
We were talking more about external culture and its influence on organizations to some extent. But he wrote a blog post, which was excellent, a few weeks ago. And it was something called along the lines of the problem of forced fun. And you alluded to this in a comment you made a few minutes ago.
Okay.
And his point was particularly about Zappos. He went out to Zappos and everybody's doing the Zappos cheer and singing the songs or whatever it is they do out there, right?
Yeah.
And to him, it seemed very inauthentic. It seemed very forced. Like, you know, he wasn't convinced that the people actually believed what they were saying. And even if they did, it seemed kind of very off-putting to him as an observer. So I thought maybe you alluded to that a little bit about sort of the inauthenticity, perhaps, of everybody trying to sing to the company line. And I thought maybe you might want to just comment or give an observation or two about that concept.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I think that, I can't remember if it was Business Week or Harvard Business Review that did a blog post about that as well, but a whole ton of comments. I think I tweeted it out somewhere along the line. But yes, you know, there is a risk of cultures seeming forced and behaviors feeling force-fed. And when you talk about, you know, hiring for personality and fit to an organization, that's a great example. I mean, someone that comes from a very simple, very restrictive culture may not fit in at Zappos.
Right.
You know, to Megan's point, it's all about personality fit. So when you look at aligning behaviors and aligning attitudes and making sure that they're in accordance with values and business strategy, you know, it's not about creating conformity. It's not about force-feeding behaviors to employees. It's about recognizing what good behavior is and what good and strong performance is in order for others to be able to understand it, for those stories to be told internally and externally. I think Zappos does have that potential of feeling forced. But honestly, in my opinion, I don't believe that it is. I believe that, you know, Tony had created that culture, that feeling of fun and experimentation and being yourself within that environment and allowing people to be free to express themselves.
Right.
And they also hire for that. And so, you know, they pay people to quit if they don't fit within the culture. So that tells you that they are very, very dedicated to making sure that they've got the right people with the right personalities that are going to be reflected of that brand and of that style.
Right.
And I
right.
think anytime you see massive growth in terms of headcount in a company, you know, there's some confusion that can go along with that as well. It's like, okay, we were 50 people and now we're 100. What's our culture? You know, because 50 more people into that, it's a different dynamic. There's different personalities in the mix. But the more that companies can embrace a diverse workforce, and say, you know, this person has these unique skills, and this person has the opposite of that, and they're also unique, and we value these two people equally, you know, the more that we're going to see probably greater output and probably a more positive workforce. But, you know, I think on the reality scale, I think we've got a long way to go. I think that, you know, there's a lot happening out there clearly in terms of storytelling and blogging and the way that people can relate to what they want to be in their careers and how they express themselves.
Let me stop you right there. We're about, the live stream is about to cut off. So here's what we're going to do. Shauna, could you just start opening up the lines of everybody else who's who sort of raised their
hand
and wanted to get on. Yeah, open up all those lines, and we'll get those open up. We'll take all those calls on the after show, and everything that goes on the after show, we'll make the recorded archive. Hopefully Cherie and Megan can hang out with us for a few extra minutes to address the last few calls and questions that go on the after show. For folks listening on the Internet, this is the HR Happy Hour, the Culture Show next week, HR Evolution 2010 preview show. We'll look forward to that. We'll have all the HR Evolution folks on board. And so that'll be next week. So everybody else who's on the phone, hanging out on the line, join us on the after show. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Really?
It's our happy hour.
Sure.
Okay, who's with us still?
I'm still here with you, Steve.
Megan with Talent Culture.
So we have Megan and Bill and Cherie.
Marguerite Grenat.
Hi, Marguerite.
How are you?
Great. Nice to hear you guys. Great
nice
show.
To hear you, too.
Marguerite's part of the Talent Culture community.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, we're happy to have her.
Hey, Megan and Cherie and Steve and Bill and Marguerite.
Oh, my God. Do we have another member of the Talent Culture community?
You recognize the voice? How could you, Megan?
Of course.
Who is it?
I've been listening to the whole show, but I didn't want to cut in. But you guys did terrifically well. Cherie, I'm learning a lot, and it's been a lot of fun listening.
Nice.
Who is it? Nice to hear from you.
You're welcome.
It's Mike Raymer.
Hi,
Mike.
Hi. Who is that?
Hi, Mike.
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve. Had to come in.
Steve, don't get Mike to speak. You have to pay him. I'm only joking, Mike.
Oh, gosh.
Phil, the
show. Bill, so every word is
so
a dollar?
About it.
Bill, what time is it for you?
He's like a lawyer. He starts the stopwatch when he starts speaking. I think.
That's a great crew.
I thought that was such a terrific show. Steve, where do you rank that on your shows?
Thank you. I thought it was a good show. I really did.
He's just saying that because we're still on the phone.
Right.
And everybody afterwards is still going to be listening to the recording, so you got to, you know.
We're all on the recording. I would say it anyway. No, I thought it was a really good show. The topic, this is sort of the second more or less show we've done on this topic, slightly different this time, and you know, we ran out of time again. I mean, people love this topic, and there's a lot of things to talk about. You know, we could do a whole other one on this. So I thought it was good. And Megan and Cherie were great, and I thought they would
Thank
be.
Thank you.
It's great to be. I mean, it's been so much fun. I feel like I could keep talking. Yeah. I feel like I need another 3 hours.
I know.
We could easily talk for longer.
We're culture geeks, so you got to watch
that.
Yeah,
we're culture geeks.
Love the topic. It's going to go on forever. And Steve, I think Trish McFarlane just recruited me to facilitate this topic at HR Evolution. So.
Oh, you know, it's a perfect
fit.
Yay! I'll be
in that conversation.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to say hi. David Manister here.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. Doing well. I heard you guys at the tail end kind of talking about the experience at the tweet up over there and just the sessions and everything, and it was just so different from what we just had over here, and I missed the tail end of the show. I was listening to it online, so I couldn't call in. So different.
Yeah, those SHRM events are definitely populated by that sort of old school mentality, right, in a major
kind
way.
Kind of scared.
Oh, it's all about protection and reaction versus, you know, kind of like the thing that we were talking about tonight as far as engagement and trying to be proactive about it. Like I went,
right.
like the session I went to this morning, it was a lawyer and he was fear.
Yeah.
So,
I think there's some,
I think the culture thing is quite important in there. What we were talking about, earlier, in terms of how your culture is reflected outside.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And if people are using social media to reflect what the real culture is, and it's not the image they want to be portrayed as the employee brand, that's where you get the fear factor.
Right.
You know, a comment I made, one of the tweets I made earlier, which got a mixed reaction, was that at the end of the day, the social media doesn't build the culture; it just reflects the culture.
Right.
And if people are saying, you know, it's like any part of social media listening, if people are saying bad things about you, then if enough of them are saying it, perhaps you need to do something about it.
Well, the one that really got to me when you said it was the, I think you mentioned a lawyer who was saying that they could spy on unions with false profiles, and
right,
it just seemed so wrong. And if I heard the word transparency over here one more time, I was just ready to kind of rip my hair out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like it's all about kind of that transparency and kind of, you know, being open to people and being genuine, and that one in particular just it kind of blew my mind.
David, do you think it's because recruiters are just on the cutting edge of everything? That event like yours, which is mostly recruiting.
I think
you know, it's going to be ahead of core HR on this.
I think it's recruiters are better than everyone at everything.
Well done, David. I get a nice.
I think there's recruiters who are, you know, ahead of the curve, and I think there's recruiters who are behind the curve, just like every other profession,
right,
and every other, you know, group of people, you know. So it's just I think that there's at these events there's a responsibility to kind of curate and use some
right
editorial judgment, and
mm-hmm,
but any news channel, newspaper, anything, you know, the editors are kind of influencing what people hear by their choices. And, you know, we've made choices because we have a certain worldview, and, you know.
Yeah,
there's other worldviews out there.
I mean, it's Megan from Talent Culture. I would say that, you know, historically speaking, when you talk about who's in charge of potentially the culture at an organization, it's a number of different people, obviously, that make up the whole. We've got the CEO, we have the V-level executives, but we also have HR that's sort of bartering the communications a lot of the times in medium to larger size companies between the employees and the management team. So I think when you start talking about, you know, a lot of the legalities, HR is a lot more tied into that, I would say, than recruiters are. And, you know, I'm speaking from a recruiter standpoint. I mean, that's really where I've spent most of my career as a recruiter. So, you know, I think that's sort of that natural dynamic that develops.
And, you know, this
Shauna,
is Benjamin.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Shauna,
yeah,
can
go
you
ahead.
Still see this? Shauna, can you still see the switchboard?
Not at all.
Okay. All right. Because I can't.
I know. I saw Jeff's tweet, and I'm like, shoot.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, the only thing I was going to say is I think you guys talked about this in some past shows when you talked about culture and who actually owns it or controls it. And my personal opinion is I don't think anybody controls it. I mean, there's people
right
that can be in charge and kind of help mold it and shape it and lead certain people to kind of be engaged and encourage it. But I don't think anybody controls the culture.
I could not agree with you more. It's just like a brand. I mean, your culture, you have a culture, and it's being defined by the people that live it every day.
That's why it's dynamic.
I mean,
culture is
evolving.
A dynamic. That's why, Steve, I think we need a couple more culture shows because it's so dynamic. Because
we need a couple more shows
day
on everything.
And you know, the
there's not one way to define culture. I mean, culture, when you start talking about behavior, you're walking into very muddy territory that,
yeah,
you know, people really, you can't define it, and it changes weekly because we're dealing with people.
Well, defining
Megan, that's exactly it, and that's why it's
such
an interesting topic, because
right
it's ever-changing, and you can't
right
define it. Steve started off the show, hey, try to define culture, and
mm-hmm,
you were defining it your way, Cherie was defining
right
it her way,
right,
and it's ever-changing, and it's,
yep,
it's such a fascinating part why it will forever be a human dynamic. No
yeah
computers or artificial intelligence could ever
right
take the place of it, at least in our lifetimes.
No.
And that's what's so fascinating about the world of HR and recruiting, is because of that human element and dynamic. And then culture is just that larger, amorphous, ever-changing
right
dynamic that you know, has a brand and a feel to it. And that's, from the recruiting perspective, that's where sort of our gut instinct comes in. I mean, we can qualify people and candidates and look at the 20 points of how they're qualified, but it's their, you know, the personality style, behavioral, and the fit that really creates the magic of recruiting. And that's what's so fascinating about it, and I think that's why this is such a topic that could go on and on, you know?
And I totally agree. And that's the interesting thing. When you look at Cherie and myself, we both handle culture branding, right? Cherie handles a lot of the branding from within the organization stepping out. And myself and Talent Culture, we handle it at sort of the front end of the process going in. Mm-hmm. So could you imagine when we marry, like, Vokai services with Talent Culture services and sort of, like, get a mesh between what's really going on within the organization and us recruiters at the front end? I mean, that's where there, I think, has been a huge disconnect. Because a lot of the times, and Mike, you can probably, and Bill Borman, if you're still on the line, and other recruiters that are here, you know, we're coming in at a different angle.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're one is defining and defining the culture, defining the behaviors, defining the attitudes, setting the messages.
But we also have a different agenda.
Strategy. Yeah. Right. And
as a recruiter, my agenda is to hire.
Right.
Sorry, I've cut you off there. But
defining,
you know, that's
the culture is going
to
help.
That is my only agenda. And I think as retention becomes more of a measure, then it will become more important. But in the beginning, and that's why I think sometimes recruiters will have a different outlook on it, because we're bothered about the fit being right at entry point. That's our concern, not what they're going to be doing in 3 years' time.
And you know what, Bill? I can't wait to meet you, because when we sit down and talk, we're just going to totally talk over each other, and it's going to be so exciting and fun.
It's going to be great. It's going to be all right. Come
nice.
To Crew USA.
I love it.
Come to Madison. Come to Madison, and we'll talk it to death for 3 days.
Well, wait a minute. Is that at the same time as HR Evolution?
I'm at HR Evolution as well. So.
Okay. All right.
Oh, you are coming. Good.
I've got about 6 events in the States between now and April. I'm in Florida as well for Sherm.
Wow.
A few other things. So we've got True USA and True Families in Florida in August. So I like to talk.
Am I going to see you at True USA, Bill?
You are going to see me at True USA, yes.
That's going to be
terrific.
I wish
I could be there at the Madison event, Bill. It's Megan. I'm not going to be able to make... What other events are after Madison?
After Madison, we're in New Zealand and Australia and a few other places. But have a look on the site, because we've got the full list. Florida, we're in the summer.
Okay.
But Bill, HR Evolution, that's the one where I think
May,
most people will meet.
First weekend of May. And
yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Bill, do you go back and forth? Do you fly back and forth if you have a week between?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It's
a lot of travel.
It's family issues.
A lot of plane.
Yeah.
A lot of air miles.
Yeah, yeah. But that's blog time.
Yep.
Well, guys, I hate to do this, but I've got to run. I've got to spend some time with my girl.
All right.
Work-life balance.
Work-life balance.
That's another show.
Everyone.
Thanks so much.
That's another
everyone.
Show. Don't forget
David,
the life work
Bill,
bit.
Thanks, guys.
Ben, everybody else on the line. Shauna, great job. Cherie.
Yeah,
fun. Absolutely. Great time.
Thanks
we'll
for having
again
us, Steve
soon.
And Shauna. We really appreciate
great.
It.
Great. No, it was fantastic.
That's a great show. Steve, can we have a conversation later? Can I give you a bell?
Yeah, just give me like about 15 minutes.
Yeah, drop me a line when you're free with your number. Just drop it on a DM.
All right, no worries.
All right, Steve, Shauna.
You're a star. Great show. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay, take care,
guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.